You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Wednesday to you and happy Thanksgiving. This is going to be our last show before the Thanksgiving holiday. We appreciate you being with us wherever you are this week. Hope you're having a great time with your family, your friends. Hope you're safe. We're out and about. Today on our podcast, we're going to talk Arkansas football with Eli Hoff of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. A little bit later, we'll have Brian Barnhart, the play-by-play man of Illinois basketball as the Razorbacks get ready to take on the Illini in Kansas City tomorrow. Christina Long will also join me in the studio. We'll talk a little bit about this Arkansas football rivalry with Missouri, and is it a rivalry? She talked to Barry Odom. She talked to some others around the Arkansas-Missouri programs recently. Looking forward to that discussion. But first, as we said, Eli Hoff of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch joins us. The Razorbacks play the Tigers in Columbia on Saturday. It'll be a 2:30 kickoff on SEC Network. Missouri, a 3-point favorite going into the game. Eli, how are you?
I'm doing well. No Black Friday game this year. It's on a Saturday, yeah. So my whole last week of the season feels discombobulated.
You know, and I wondered how that would work whenever the SEC went into this new agreement with ESPN and all of the Disney channels, whether or not the Arkansas-Missouri Black Friday game would continue. Because basically what Arkansas and LSU did for all those years and then Arkansas-Missouri for, the last decade for the most part is – yeah, they helped CBS fill an inventory, and now it's whether or not ESPN and ABC, whether or not they want that game, and they've decided to go with some different SEC games, and so I kind of wonder if that game will ever go back there.
Yeah, that was my thought as well. That was one of the things to keep an eye for with this new just TV rights overhaul, and I guess we have our answer, but it'll be interesting to see if it's something that changes year to year at all, or if this is going to be the slot now, 2:30 on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a different feeling around here because I think it's only the third time that Arkansas hasn't played on Black Friday in like the last 30 years, so certainly a different feeling around Arkansas. What's the feeling up there in Columbia right now about this game on Saturday?
It's interesting. Obviously, the I think overall. Not optimism, but just intensity of this season took a pretty quick nosedive after that loss to South Carolina that Missouri had a couple weeks ago. That, Mizzou's CFP chances were already sinking fast by that point, and that pushed them under the surface. They're not coming back up. So it's definitely diminished a little bit. But in all honesty, after being at the team facility yesterday, talking to some folks, it's senior day for Missouri, and it's in all likelihood Luther Burden's last game in a Mizzou uniform. And I think that's kind of the focus here at this point. There's going to be a sort of generational departure just this offseason with some of these players who've been part of the last couple years from Mizzou who are leaving. And I think there's a definite shift towards appreciating them and acknowledging that this is the end of the road for them this weekend.
I do these SEC efficiency ratings where basically you're looking at, scoring rates, stop rates, and things like that. And, on the surface, you would look at Missouri and you would say they're 8-3. They went 11-2 last year. This is a very similar team. But when you start digging into the numbers, the story is a lot different. They're not as efficient offensively. They're giving up more points more points per possession on defense. What is different about this year's team than the one that won 11 games last year?
Yeah, well, you're right to point that out. And one of the things I actually say what's the same first, and what's the same from last year is the heart and the drive and some of that. Mizzou, that loss against South Carolina was – They'd won 8 previous one-score games, and then they dropped that one against South Carolina. So they pull it out in close moments. But the offense is not what it was last year. They're getting a similar level of production out of the rushing attack. Last year it was Cody Schrader doing everything. This year it's been a little bit more spread out. But the passing game just hasn't really clicked until, frankly, last week. A lot of the more explosive downfield stuff wasn't there for the first probably 2/3 of the season. And then weirdly, it was once Brady Cook hurt his wrist and could no longer throw the same way that those things started working. So that just hasn't been there. The defense lost a lot of personnel to the NFL, lost obviously the coordinator to LSU. And the transition there just didn't have as much of a punch as the defense did last year. So it's just been sort of smaller steps backwards in a lot of different areas that I think have taken away some of the bite that last year's team had.
I want to ask you about Brady Cook and this injury that he's dealing with. It's to his wrist, right? Where's he at with this injury? Is it something that he's just kind of fighting through?
It's definitely something he's fighting through. So he returned to play 2 weeks ago against South Carolina, and he's been playing with that wrist taped up, but he said he was not 100% and not as close to 100% as he'd like to be. He's just determined to grit it out. You can tell in his throwing motion, and Eli Drinkwitz confirmed this, he can't really snap his wrist like you'd expect a quarterback to do normally. So he's had to compensate different ways with all of that. So he's out there and he's playing. It's just, it's not 100%. It's getting better as he goes. But it's a bone injury, not a tendon injury. So that you're kind of handicapped in terms of what the healing process looks like with that.
One of the things I've been impressed with this Missouri team when I've watched them this year is in late game situations when the offense has the ball, they typically make the plays. They did it against Auburn when they came back. They did it against Oklahoma when they came back. They even did it against South Carolina. They just gave South Carolina too much time to go down and score and win the game. What's been the key to the way the offense has performed in those real, you know, tense, critical moments?
It's talent and playmakers at that point. It's, you know, on third and fourth down, get the ball to Luther Burden and something good happens, or get the ball to Theo Weiss and something good happens. You know, Brady Cook can convert with his legs. It's in those moments where the talent shines. And because part of the problem in other situations and other games has just been the offense kind of tripping on itself and overcomplicating things. In those moments, it becomes very pure and simple. It's just get the ball from a good player to a good player and good things happen. So I think it's in those moments when it just, the urgency is there and the simplicity is kind of there, that this offense tends to look its best and then execute in those situations.
I wanted to ask you about Missouri's defense. You know, when I watched them in the past, you always look at Missouri and you say they're going to have a really good defensive front. I think they've kind of got that this year. But one of the other things that I've always thought about Missouri is that they're typically a pretty sure tackling team, and I don't know that that's quite the case this year. What have you seen from them defensively?
Yeah, a lot of missed tackles. That was what cost them against South Carolina. It was PFF's missed tackle count for that game was 15 total, and frankly, I think that might have been a little kind. On the last play that was Rocket Sanders' game-winning touchdown there, there were at least four missed tackles just on that last touchdown. And he scored from, I think it was like 15 yards out. So there were a lot of guys in space to get him. So tackling has been a problem. It cost them a game against South Carolina. It still popped up against Mississippi State last weekend even. That's something where if you've got somebody who's got a little size and is willing to lower their shoulder, there's a non-zero chance they're just going to break the tackle and keep going against this Mizzou defense.
Does Eli Drinkwitz like being the villain?
I don't think he would say some of the things that he says and have the demeanor that he does. You know, the TV cameras catch him saying something every couple weeks, it seems like. You know, I think he kind of leans into that at this point, especially when it comes to just his role in the SEC.
Have you ever covered a snow game?
Not in football. Covered I'm from Minnesota and worked up there for a while, so I've covered some snowy sporting events before, but never a football game like this one.
The latest forecast for Saturday says high of 32, low of 15, about a 40% chance of snow in Columbia. We'll see how much snow that is. I think I've read where maybe about an inch of snow is expected during the game. How do you think the cold weather affects this game? And in particular, you know, you mentioned Missouri runs the ball well. That's been Arkansas' strength. It always seems like when the weather gets worse, running the ball becomes a key. How do you think it affects this game? And if a team has to pass, like, you know, how does it affect Brady Cook? How does it affect Luther Burden? Those types.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that the first thing that goes in a snowy environment is the deep passing, the downfield passing. And again, I think Mizzou's offense, frankly, can look better when it gets away from that. So if Mizzou has to just run a whole lot of outside zone, that's great for the Tigers. That's what they do best. They're going to be fine with that. And I think Arkansas is a team, too, that like you said, if it comes down to just leaning into the run, that's fine. Both teams will do that. And there probably won't be very many possessions in the game because the clock will be running a whole lot. But that's certainly a way this could go. Mizzou's got good running backs who can run both gap and zone schemes. They've got Brady Cook, who can run the read option fine, who can power through for you know, third and one, fourth and one type pickups if he needs it. They've got Luther Burden, who can line up in the backfield or get him the ball on jet sweeps, all these different things that I think Mizzou could certainly lean into if it needs to in a snowy environment.
Earlier this year, Missouri announced a pretty massive renovation to the football stadium. I think it was about $250 million. At the time, they said the groundbreaking was scheduled for this weekend, for this weekend's game. Is that still the case? Because, you know, in a lot of instances, we've seen where teams, they, a little announcer renovation, but now with everything that's going on with NIL and the House settlement, they're putting those things on hold.
So, yeah, it's still planned for this weekend. I haven't seen the exact logistics and timeline, but I think there's going to be a little ceremonial groundbreaking sometime before the game, like either right before or right after the senior day ceremony before they do kick off there. So that's still in the plans. And actually, they've been kind of sneaking in a little bit of construction already. If fans go, they'll notice that the kind of parking lot area that's on the north side of that stadium is closed off to vehicles. There's a little sidewalk for pedestrians to go through where they've been getting equipment set up. They've got the kind of construction office trailers built there now. They're pretty much ready to go full steam ahead once the season ends here, and they've been doing as much setup as they can to this point.
How much did last year's season play into the ability to go fundraise for a renovation like this?
I mean, that's everything. That's the genesis of why they're doing that investment. They were talking about it as last season went, but then it was after last season that they saw, okay, this is our opportunity to invest. It's based on that momentum. It's also based on Eli Drinkwitz to a certain degree. It's a pretty big gamble on him and what he's building in this program. But that's if last year doesn't happen, I'm not sure the project comes to fruition at this scale or with this price tag.
How does it change the look of the stadium when the new renovation is complete? Missouri, from my seat, when I go to the game there, it looks like one of the older stadiums in the SEC, like one that needs some of the most TLC.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what it looks like, because it's messing with that Rock M, that grass hill that is one of the more iconic fixtures of the stadium. Mm-hmm. So the hill will still be there, but the part that's actually grass will be pretty drastically shrunken. It'll be a lot of premium seats and loge boxes and all that sort of thing. So I think it'll make an impact from a kind of silhouette point, from a noise standpoint, because it'll close off that side of the stadium. But it's not going to add a ton of capacity. I think it's adding about 2,000 premium seats. So it's not like you're going to be packing in a ton more fans with this. And you're losing that general admission hill seating that's there and been a big part of atmospheres. So it'll be a nice looking space, an event space they can have year round and all of that. That's part of their pitch. But it'll definitely change what the kind of grassy vibe is of that part of the stadium.
There's always talk when Arkansas and Missouri play about rivalry. Is it a rivalry? There's a rivalry trophy. There's a, shelter insurance. They've got the sponsorship. But on this side of the Ozarks, it doesn't feel like people feel like it is much of a rivalry. I wonder, what's the feeling about Arkansas up there in Missouri?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more of a rivalry than it was 10 years ago. But I still don't know if it gets there. I think for Missouri folks, there's more animosity towards Oklahoma within the SEC now. There's probably even more towards like the South Carolinas and lately Tennessee. And again, it's growing against Arkansas, but I don't think it's there as a rivalry yet. It's certainly not there with what Missouri, has or had with Kansas, just outside of the SEC back in the Big 12. It's getting there, but I don't think it's all the way there yet. And I think some of that is just these games, when they're played in this last weekend slot, like, yes, it's rivalry week, but these games haven't always meant a whole lot, because it seems like one of Mizzou and Arkansas isn't always playing for a whole lot at this part of the season. And so I wonder how much that has kind of hamstrung this.
Well, and people don't show up for the games. I mean, they just haven't meant a whole lot, like you've said. I mean, Arkansas tried to move this to Little Rock at one point. Missouri tried to move this to Arrowhead at one point, just because they can't get the on-campus attendance. Hey, let's get you out of here on this. What do you think the key to this weekend's game is?
I think just given what we think the weather could be, even if it's not snowy, it's going to be cold. I think it comes down to which team can establish the run better and more quickly. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of possessions here if both teams are running the ball. So I think who can invade the other team's territory and drain the clock and put together a 7-minute scoring drive, I think that's really going to be the key here. So just which team gets the run going first is what will be the key.
Eli Hoff of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read his work at stltoday.com. Eli, we appreciate you.
For sure. Thanks for having me. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, you too. Happy Thanksgiving. Christina Long will be with us when we come back, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kindle King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kindle King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
I may mispronounce his name, but Talon Green.
Let's manufacture this thing. Nothing gets a good rivalry going like mispronouncing names. Remember when, who was the Missouri linebacker?
Eric Beisel.
Let's call him Diesel. Eric Diesel, whenever he mispronounced Arkansas as Arkansas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just and kept so saying Arkansas. They shouldn't bother showing up, and Missouri was like really bad.
And that was
year,
a Missouri team.
Yeah,
like that was their only SEC win that year. And he was kind of right. That was kind of a similar game weather wise as this one this weekend, or at least what it's expected to be. Cold, cold, cold game. That day, it's supposed to be really cold again on Saturday. That was Eli Drinkwitz, by the way, talking about Talon Green. Look, he may have been harmless, but that's
the kind of stuff he does.
It's in character.
He loves that we're talking about it. That's what he does.
Yeah, it's in character
for sure.
Eli Drunkwitz. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Christina Long, the proud Missouri graduate here with me today. So you wrote something, and you've got a really unique perspective on this. The Arkansas-Missouri series and the trophy that was created for it. And you've got a story in our latest Hogs Illustrated. Yeah. It's also on our website today at wholehogsports.com. You can read it there. But basically just about how this game, you know, the leadership on both sides, the SEC office, I think, you know, had this thought too, that when they put Arkansas and Missouri as permanent end-of-year opponents back in 2014, that this would be a natural rivalry, that it would just take off because, you know, the two states touch each other. In basketball, it's got a long-standing rivalry to it. I mean, Norm Stewart's teams, Nolan Richardson's teams, they had some great games throughout the late 80s and into the early or throughout the 1990s. Of course, Mike Anderson going from there to here certainly you know, ramped up that basketball rivalry again. It just hasn't taken off in football. And you talked to Missouri's former AD about this, and you said he couldn't even remember the name that they had given the rivalry.
It was very funny. I spoke with Mike Alden, who was very kind, and he retired, I think, in 2016, but still lives in Columbia, goes to all the football games, you know, still around. He does some consulting in the athletics world, still plugged in. But it was funny. We were talking about it. He couldn't recall the name of the battle line rivalry game, which I thought was just very telling. But no, you know, he talked to me a little bit about kind of the origin of this. You know, the SEC, this was an SEC scheduling thing. This was not, you know, the schools approve it, but they're not building their schedules. And he talked about how the SEC basically saw it and, you know, they crunched some numbers related to, you know, TV and, you know, how financially it would work, things like that. And then they also said, great, geographically, awesome. This should be a great rivalry. And then the schools kind of, they didn't necessarily push back on that. You know, Alden said he expected that, you know, especially in like southern Missouri, which where you'll have more people that have more crossover with Arkansas, he expected there would be a little bit more of something there. And, you know, he knew from the beginning, you know, I don't think the impression I got was not that any of these administrators thought, oh yeah, there's going to be tons of fire behind this rivalry right away, because that's not how rivalries work, right? And they know that. These are people that have spent their lives in sports. Alden was coming out, he was taking a lot of heat for, you know, the move from the Big 12 and losing their real rival in Kansas. And so he said that he, you know, a lot of Missouri fans pushed back on the Arkansas thing because they're like, who are you to tell us who our rival is when you took our real rival away from us? And that was something that he dealt with a lot. And so, you know, I think he basically said we knew it wasn't going to be there right away, but the hope was that over time it would develop. And that was the idea.
Like, explain Missouri-Kansas to people who don't understand, because this is not just a rival. It is a big rivalry, but I mean, there is a genuine, don't know if I'd say dislike, but at one point in time, there really was a genuine dislike between Kansans and people from Missouri.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a generational dislike, and there's not a ton of... There's more crossover, I guess, now, but yeah, it's truly, you know, it is one of the bigger rivalries in the Midwest, in the Midwest region, and it was sad to see it go, and it was weird being a Missouri student, you know, fairly early in their time in the SEC, and they never had rival, you know, like none of the games were that exciting to people. And even, you know, I was there after, you know, their SEC championship game appearances, you know, so it wasn't even, when I was there, it wasn't even like Missouri was fielding a great team and really competing in the East. They were okay to bad. And so there was just wasn't a lot of excitement. People weren't getting, you know, in games against Kansas, it would be, you know, even when Kansas was terrible, people would show up for that game with football. You know, it was mm-hmm. it was a big deal. And Missouri just didn't have that when I was a student. And it definitely changes kind of the student experience a little bit. And I think now that they're better, I'm sure that it's different. I'm sure students are more amped for games in general in the SEC. There's been more time that they've been in the league. And they are playing better, so there's always going to be more excitement. But when I was a student, yeah, it was just you weren't excited about any of the particular opponents, and then when the team wasn't very good, you weren't that excited to watch the team either.
It's just sad the way realignment, you know, the conference changes, that it takes away these, like, Bedlam,
mm-hmm.
OU OSU, that should be played every
it's
year.
It's crazy that it's gotta be eventually.
Why can we not figure out a way to, okay, you want to move conferences, that's fine, but like retain the rivalries, because that's part of what people love about college football. And the fact that, you know, you have Texas and Texas A&M that go 13 years without playing each other, that's unfortunate. And KU, Missouri is another one, and the list is very long about the number of rivalries that were lost. And I really think it's telling the number of rivalries that have been lost and the number of rivalries that have been formed through conference realignment, it's not even in the same ballpark. Blake, you had a thought?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say the Missouri-Kansas thing actually goes back to pre-Civil War.
Oh, I know.
Bleeding Kansas and all that. So, yeah, there's some bad blood there. It's hundreds of years old.
For sure. It's a fascinating rivalry, and it's, you know, it's somewhat unique in that. And there's some, you know, Midwest or Northern rivalries and some in the SEC, too, that go back that far that are really interesting. And that's one of them, and it's sad that it's not there. You know, when I was a student, they played, I think it was maybe my freshman year, they played a charity basketball game against Kansas. And it was like the Michael Porter junior year when Missouri was supposed to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a big deal. They played it in Kansas City, sold it out, raised a bunch of money. There had been, I can't remember which hurricane it was, but it was a hurricane relief game, I believe. You know, raised a ton of money. They put it on pay-per-view, raised a ton of money that way. It was absolutely packed. You know, there was so much. That was one of the more exciting Missouri sporting events I went to in my 4 years as a student. It was an exhibition. It was awesome.
It's just sad. I just hate it that the real rivalries have been lost, and you're trying to manufacture rivalries. So you talked to Barry Odom too, and you referenced this the other day. He really kind of leaned into this, you know, Arkansas deal, and really the Razorbacks haven't recovered since he became the head coach. I mean, even when he came down here as a defensive coordinator, they only beat him one time. Missouri goes into this game this weekend, I think having won 7 of the last 8 in the series. They never lost to Arkansas when Odom was the head coach.
Yeah, and it was great to talk to Barry Odom. You know, he took some time out of, you know, coaching UNLV. They had a game that week, and he took some time out of his day to talk, which was really kind
probably
of
probably on a Friday.
Yeah. It wasn't a Friday, because I told him, I said, I've watched a lot of UNLV football this year because it's always on Friday.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, we got another one this week. So it was great for him to, you know, take a few minutes to talk. But he talked about how when he was at Missouri, when he took over for Gary Pinkel had, he would post like 4 major goals for the season, you know, pretty basic coach motivational tactic. And Barry said that he moved beat Arkansas up on the list. So he put, you know, win a championship, you know, win an SEC championship, and then he put beat Arkansas. And he really wanted to play that up for a lot of his guys. At the time, we talked about this the other day, they had a lot of guys from Arkansas. They had a lot of guys from Fayetteville. Guys I went to high school with. It was funny. I went to Mizzou with a bunch of guys that I'd gone to high school with. We had a big class go up there. And, you know, so it was really personal for a lot of his players at the time, and he really wanted to lean into that. And then when he came to Arkansas, it was super personal for him. And so he said, I felt like it was the biggest game of the year. And he brought some Missouri guys with him to Arkansas, and it was a huge deal for them, too. And he said, you know, he really played into that. Now, they didn't have the same kind of success that he had when he was at Missouri, but he said it was a big deal. And so internally for both programs, he said kind of regardless of whether or not the fans – felt it was a rivalry. Like we felt it in the locker room. You know, it was there for them as a staff. And he said, you know, I think I tried to create it a little bit at Missouri more than it really was there at the time. But I think it worked. And he said he's found that to be a successful motivational tactic. You know, I talked to him a little bit about rivalries in general. And I asked him a little bit about, you know, he played at Missouri. And I asked him, how do you feel like rivalries are different now than when you were a player, with just how transient, you know, college football is now? Guys are, you know, recruiting has been national for a long time, so that's played into it. You're getting guys that are from all over. And then now, of course, with transfers. And he was saying at UNLV, he's got, you know, most of his roster is new to UNLV. Mm-hmm. And they don't know anything about the rivalry with Nevada, and Barry didn't know anything about it when he got there. And so he had to learn it. And he did say he feels that there is value in kind of teaching the players, hey, this is why your fans care about this. They care about this a lot. You obviously aren't coming into this with the background, but this is what it means to the people that are coming to watch you and the people that support you. And he said he felt that there's real value in that. And, you know, he said he does think rivalries are different now because of some of that, but that he still, you have to change how you approach it because there's not that, players aren't bringing that inherently with them, but he does kind of use it. And we saw Pittman do that with Texas, kind of trying to teach some of these guys the history. It's a little different because they have a lot more Texas guys on the roster, but, you know, I thought it was interesting his perspective on sort of the state of rivalries in general.
And I don't know of a player who has done this, but I would not be shocked if in this, you know, last 4 or 5 years where you've got the freedom of movement where players will play on both sides of a rivalry just because they'll pay me more or they've got an opportunity for me and they told me to get lost. And that tells you kind of what you need to know too about the changing state of rivalry games.
For sure. I mean, Arkansas and Missouri have had players cross over.
Yeah, man, that's
so they, you know, guys that have moved between those two.
I was talking more about, you know, like your...
The real rivalries, big ones, you know, like Michigan, Ohio State. Yeah. If you had players go back and forth on that one, that would be a big deal.
I mean, there have been a lot on the Arkansas-Missouri side that have changed sides.
For sure, yeah. So it's interesting to kind of track that. And so that was kind of what I wrote about in this story that's online today, is just kind of how much... has it grown? Because I don't think, and I was kind of trying to reach my own conclusion in the story as well, but also kind of present what some other people think. We polled some readers on our message board about their thoughts on it, and I included some of their comments. And I think kind of where I landed with it is there is more feeling about it now than there was 10 years ago, which makes total sense. They didn't play that much before. Now they've played 10 times. Of course they care a little bit more about each other. They know each other better. But it's still, you know, 10 years in college football rivalry terms is not a long time.
No.
And so I think where I got to with it is I think over the, you know, maybe in the next 10 years, I think it is building, but I think, you know, Eli Hoff, your guest on the last segment, really spoke to it well, where he said, you know, this is not a game that has had high stakes for either team. And that's something that Mike Alden brought up. He said, I don't, you know, this game hasn't had signature moments or signature games. Oh, one thing I included in the story this year, we've written multiple stories on our website and in the magazine about crazy moments from the games versus Texas A&M, against Texas, against Ole Miss, against LSU, looking back on all these iconic moments or just like crazy memories that people have. And the Arkansas-Missouri game just hasn't had that. And part of it is it's not a very old game. And part of it is there just haven't been high stakes and the teams haven't always been that good. And so I think that's something, you know, Mike Alden said he also feels there should be, you know, if it built up more in other sports, maybe it would carry over. Missouri is not a serious baseball program, so it's not going to happen there. Don't know if you've heard. You know, and so, you know, maybe if it builds up in some other sports, there's something, you know, basketball, they've been down. They had a bad year last year. If they're, you know, if they improve and compete with Arkansas, that would help. But I think the longer it goes, the more it'll be. Because the other thing I find so interesting about this rivalry is every year, Missouri and Arkansas fans fight online about who cares less about this game. It's so funny. And I noticed this morning, you know, we tweeted the story out just promoting it on our Whole Hog account. And there were like 10 replies in the first half hour of people being like, it's not a rivalry. It is a rivalry. Missouri fans being like, I don't care about Arkansas. You know, like they wear it as a badge of honor that they don't care about the other team. And then they say a million times how much they don't care. And it's like, it kind of seems like you do a little bit.
Like if you wanted to prove you didn't care, wouldn't you just not respond?
Right.
I mean, like silence is the best indicator of apathy.
Exactly. So it's just, it's interesting. I think, you know, over time, I think we will see more there. I think, you know, if you get better performances, better games, there will be something. But I think as far as the fan bases go, it's funny to kind of watch the back and forth, and who cares less. You know, you don't want to be caught caring about Missouri.
They need a better trophy.
They do. The trophy is not good.
I love David Basil. He's a friend of mine. But
I mean, I love the Golden Boot.
He basically created the same trophy mm-hmm. that he created for Arkansas and LSU. I mean, it's just...
And it's an impractical... It's funny.
Arkansas's on top on one. They're on bottom on the other.
I was looking for photos, you know, to go with this story.
And this thing is huge, too, by the way.
It's 180 pounds,
52 inches,
tall?
180 pounds, silver trophy, 25-pound ribbon. That ribbon that they put on it is 25 pounds. Yeah. I mean, think about that for a minute.
So, like, I was trying to pull photos, and I was able to get the one of, you know, them, Arkansas, hoisting it, you know, in the last time they won it. But there's not a lot of hoisting photos the way there are with other trophies.
You do not hoist that.
It's funny. This is Tykes Crawford.
You throw your back out.
This is Tykes Crawford. It's scary. And there is a photo of him carrying it by himself, and it's very funny. But I looked at, you know, Missouri has won it more recently, and so the Associated Press photos from that game. It's funny. Nobody's picking the trophy up. It's just like Missouri. It's so awkward. It's a bunch of Missouri players, like, standing next to the trophy, like, pointing at it.
They, like, wheel it around on, like, a dolly or something.
Yeah, and it's, like, players just kind of pointing at it, or they just kind of stand by it and look at it. Like, there's not a lot you can do with it.
See, they needed something like a Branson fiddle or something.
Yeah.
That's what you need to... You know, something that's, like, geographic.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. So, yeah.
Also, that you can hold without 200-300-pound men carrying it around.
And I think the thing about this game that draws so much ire is the, not necessarily the look of the trophy, but the fact that there is a trophy, the fact that it is a sponsored, branded rivalry game with a name. That felt so contrived to people. I mean, the word contrived came up in the message board comments that I requested, like, four times. And it makes sense. It's correct. And I don't necessarily blame them. At the time, there were not a lot of games that were getting sponsor deals outside of bowl games. Now we see it way more often. You have games that are sponsored by insurance companies, financial places, things like that. So it's become more common, but at the time, it was pretty new. And honestly, I think we'll see it even more as schools just try to make an extra buck everywhere they can.
If you want to impress your family at Thanksgiving around the table tomorrow, you can tell them that the Battle Line Trophy was cut out of a water jet machine, cut a 90-pound, 2.5-inch thick outline of the states of Arkansas and Missouri from 1,200 pounds of steel. It's a process that took 40 consecutive hours, and the trophy later required 30 hours of hand polishing over the course of 4 days.
I wonder how much it cost. Like, what did they pay for this? Especially for, like, the labor and everything. I would be so curious how much it was spent and who pays for this. I wonder if shelter insurance paid for it? I have no idea.
Possibly. Maybe the schools went halfsies.
I should have found that out for the story. Should have done some harder
reporting.
I do know
that I think, now I don't know if it was $10,000, but I know that both schools put $5,000 toward the boot.
Oh, really?
Whenever it was created in the 1990s.
I love the boot trophy. I think it's super cool.
So anyway, you can talk to your family about how the Battle Line Trophy was created. Hey, Sam Pittman had some comments about Missouri last night on his coach's show. He did his coach's show on Tuesday this week because of the Thanksgiving holiday. This was out at the Catfish Hole, and this is courtesy of Hogs Plus.
We're 0-6 up there as a forever. We lost the last two by 2 points up there that we've been up there, and of course they embarrassed us last year. Really good quarterback, great leader, a couple of at least two, probably three wonderful wide receivers. I like their tight end. Their O-line is always good at running that stretch play. They go by the quarterback. I mean, that's what they do. I think Coach Drinkwitz does a wonderful job of calling plays and understanding his talent, what he has, and uses them. Defensively, multiple. They've got a really good pass rusher in 15, number 15, really good pass rusher. They've got linebackers that can run. Their back end's good. And their special teams are good. They're 23rd in the country, which will make our seventh top 25 team we played this year. And it's up there. So it's a place, obviously, we haven't been able to win. And, you know, it's going to be cold. But you can look at cold as it's going to be cold, or you can say, hey, thank you, Lord, for allowing us to have a game, you know, and thank you and bless. Thank you for blessing us with the opportunity to play Missouri, no matter what the temperature is. And I'd rather look at that, and I think our team is looking at it that way as well.
I'm working on something about the coldest cold weather games that Arkansas has played in, at least that are documented, and I'll have something on that on our website a little bit later in this week at wholehogsports.com. You know, so he didn't say any of the players' names. You can't mispronounce number 15.
That's,
I mean,
so
I guess
true.
He could have called him like number 14 or something, but
that's true. But then it just looks like he's wrong. Yeah. It doesn't look like a disc.
Hey, he's a receiver. He's not a defensive end.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's also funny because I feel like Talen Green, I mean, maybe it's different on the field, but he doesn't strike me as like a, you know, like he's like a smack talker at all. And so it's just funny. You know, I was like, they should have picked on, if you want to really like get somebody going, pick on one of the guys that seems to buy into that a little
bit. Like
who
on the team would be pissed off the most?
Jaquindon Jackson. 100%.
You think
he'd
be?
Yeah, I have no doubt. Or like any of the DBs probably.
Yeah.
But I feel like Jaquindon is the guy to, if you want to like get under somebody's skin, and Jaquindon will take it and use it, you know, like he will. So yeah, it's kind of
always interesting how different guys, and it's not even guys. I mean, women can do this in sports too. How athletes though, they can harness, like they can find the slightest bit of even perceived misrespect, mm-hmm. and they can harness that anger and turn it into these great performances.
Yeah, it's crazy. I wish I could do that. I
do that every day that I come on the podcast.
I just get sad. You know, it's like I don't do that well.
Yeah, Blake.
I think Bobby Boucher was the best at that.
He was phenomenal.
Best example. Yeah.
Yeah, he would just see things and then he'd just kick their butt.
Yeah, he used it as tackling fuel.
Yeah, tackling fuel. Hey, by the way, this is Blake's last podcast with us. Blake is doing what a lot of people do when they leave us. He's not the first who has left me to go up north. But, Blake, we appreciate everything you've done for us. And sad to see you go.
Hey, thanks, man. Yeah, it's been going on 8 years now, but time for a new chapter, you know. But I'll definitely miss this show for sure.
I've been here long. This is I'm about to go into my 15th year being here.
That's crazy.
And it's crazy how many people have cycled through here, whether it be people who have been reporters for us or interns or, you know, photographers, people who kind of work maybe more around the perimeter of some of the stuff that we do. I'm starting to feel like the old man here, but it's kind of, it's fun too, to see how people have gone off and, done some really cool things.
Yeah, for sure. We'll miss Blake, and we're glad he's here, and hope you have a happy Thanksgiving too, Blake. But
thank you so much.
I hope you'll keep listening to the show every day.
Oh, for sure. I'm going to be driving up to Bentonville every day.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
So I'll have something to listen to.
Yeah.
We need that click. Yeah. Hey, when we come back, Brian Barnhart, he is the play-by-play voice of the Illinois Fighting Illini. Arkansas and Illinois playing in a basketball game tomorrow at T-Mobile Center in Kansas City. We'll get his thoughts on the game. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Arkansas and Illinois are going to play a basketball game up in Kansas City tomorrow, 3:00 tip-off. It'll be on CBS. Ian Eagle and Bill Rafter will be on the call on CBS. You can also listen to it on the Razorback Sports Network, or you could listen to Illinois' radio broadcast. And we bring in now Brian Barnhart. He is the play-by-play voice of the Fighting Illini. This is a big game, Brian, that I think we all knew it was going to be a big game, but the way these two teams, their season has started out, certainly has validated all the preseason talk about this game.
Yeah, I think so. They've got the same records. You know, when you look at it, they played similar games on Monday night. Arkansas, I think, went on a 28-0 run over Maryland Eastern Shore. Illinois went on a 23-0 run against Little Rock. You know, they've been swapping opponents here a little bit. We got a little multi-team event going on. So, you know, I think the records are similar. You look at a lot of the stats, I think there's some similarity. And, of course, you got the twin Ivicic brothers there going at each other in the middle. So, there's the ultimate, I guess. We're going to have to sort out is You know, Chuck Barron and I, as the play-by-play guys, are going to have to figure out when we're describing the action which Ivas pitch it actually is. So,
you know, here at Arkansas, they call Zvonimir Big Z. Do they call Tomislav Big T?
Well, I haven't heard that one yet, okay. So maybe I should work that in. They call him Tommy around here.
Okay.
So yeah, but just that should be interesting. The brothers going at it, of course, and then you know, John Calipari, of course, had been at Kentucky, as everybody mm-hmm. knows. His assistant, Orlando Antigua, had worked for Brad Underwood along with Chin Coleman. They had both been with Brad Underwood when Brad came to Champaign a few years ago. And mm-hmm. then, of course, Chin and Orlando went to Kentucky to work for Calipari. And then Orlando's come back, and Chin Coleman went to Arkansas. So it's a pretty interesting dynamic there.
You know, you saw Arkansas a couple of years ago. They played an NCAA tournament game up in Des Moines against each other. Eric Musselman was the coach then, and obviously he had a lot of success at Arkansas. But I wonder, did the program, how much does it change in your mind now that Calipari's taken over?
Well, I don't know. Probably too early to tell. I mean, you guys would probably know better than I about that. But in this day and age with college basketball, I mean, who knows? You know, with transfer portal and, you know, guys just kind of going wherever, whenever they want. So I know Calipari brought a couple of guys with him from Kentucky. And, you know, Eric Musselman had his style. I know years ago Nolan Richardson had his style. Mm-hmm. So they all kind of bring their, you know, their brand on it. You know, I just know that he's won a lot of basketball games. And what is he, over 800 now or mm-hmm. something like that? And he's been doing it for a very long time. I'm old enough to remember his early days at UMass when he was first there. So, you know, he's obviously in a Hall of Fame kind of coach for a reason. And, you know, I think the style of it probably varied, I'm sure, from Coach Musselman to him now. But, you know, I'm sure people in Arkansas are probably still learning about him anyway right now.
Big Ten schedule is different than the SEC because you play more games. This is your last tune-up for conference play, right?
No, we've got a couple more yet.
Oh, do you? Okay.
We've got what they do. I don't know if the SEC does this, but the Big Ten has a couple of games early in December. So they're kind of out there on an island by themselves. But we've got a game at Northwestern next week, mm-hmm. and then we're home to Wisconsin. Then we go back into non-conference play. We play Tennessee coming up in mid-December in Champaign. That's part of a home-and-home. We were in Knoxville last year with all the – I've still got Rocky Top in my head, by the way, from all of that from a year ago. But they'll be in town, and we have an annual meeting with Missouri. We've been doing that for about 45 years mm-hmm. down in St. Louis. So we got a few to go yet, but, yeah, the Big Ten schedule starts a little early, and then they pick it up again in January.
Okay. Let me ask you about just what you've seen from Illinois this year. Like we mentioned, you're 5-1, the loss being to Alabama down in Birmingham, 100-87, back on November the 20th. What's this team look like?
Well, we're kind of learning about our team, too, as we go. We've got, you know, we had 12 guys last year, and 10 of them are gone. So, you know, we've got 10 new guys on the team. And one of the two guys that was coming back was Ty Rogers, and he decided to redshirt. So we got one guy that Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn, who was on the team last year. So Illini fans as a whole, and they take to these guys pretty quickly. But, you know, Ivasich is new. Obviously, he's a key. A young man named Will Riley is our leading scorer. He comes off the bench. He's projected fairly high on the NBA draft boards. Mm-hmm. There's a young man, Kasparis Jakučionis. He's from Lithuania. He's kind of a stat stuffer. He had 21 points the other night, about 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and he does a little bit of everything. And he's also projected to be a fairly high draft pick, too. So, you know, the key for Brad Underwood is getting all these guys that have all this talent, you know, get their roles down, figure out, you know, whose job is to do what. I think early on, the first couple of games, it was, you know, a lot of up and down and quick shots. And I thought the other night in the win over Little Rock, they went to their second option on offense. They did threw a few more passes. They worked it around. They were still efficient. They scored over 90 points, but it wasn't quite just the up and down, take a quick shot that we saw in the first couple of games. We were kind of learning about, you know, what the strengths and weaknesses are all these guys on the team. But it's a very talented team. I think the ceiling is really high, and they're just now starting to figure out, you know, roles and who's the sixth guy and who's the seventh guy and, you know, the substitution patterns and all that. is really kind of a work in progress. And you know, they tried pounding it inside a little more the other night to Tommy Ivicic. They hadn't done as much of that early. So I think they're still tinkering a little bit with what they want to do and how they want this team to be. And if you're going to play for Brad Underwood, you got to play good defense. And they obviously gave up too many points at Alabama. But, you know, Brad Underwood teams are traditionally pretty strong defensively. And so I think they're still working on that side of the game, too. So this will be a big test. We've got the big stretch here. I mentioned Arkansas tomorrow there on Thanksgiving Day. You've got the game with Tennessee. You've got the two Big Ten games. You've got the Missouri game. This next month is a bunch of heavyweight games.
Tommy Ivicic, correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that he plays more with his back to the basket, more like a traditional low post player, because, you know, Zvonimir here at Arkansas, he'll step out, he'll shoot probably 5, 6, 7 threes a game. It's a different type of game, right?
A little bit. I mean, maybe he doesn't shoot at three as much as his brother does, but he's not afraid to shoot it. He's let a few fly. His shooting percentage on it's in the mid-20s, so he hasn't made – the ones he's taken, he hasn't made a lot of them. But he's not afraid to shoot it from out there. But I think he's they haven't used him as much around the basket, but he's out 10, 12 feet or whatever, and he's a really good passer. He's a distributor, and I think they're just like a new toy. They're kind of learning, oh, what does this do? What can he do? Well, he can do that, or he can do more of this or less of that. So. But he's a real talent. He's already had, six games. He's had 3 double-doubles out of those 6 already.
You mentioned Will Riley and Kasparis Jakaciūnas. They're both freshmen. They played really well, like you mentioned. What has Underwood done to get the most out of them, their potential this early?
Well, it's funny because the other night, Riley, the other afternoon, they played Maryland Eastern Shore. And he didn't score at all in like 5 minutes. He got into foul trouble in the first half, and then he had 19 in the second half. He's... I've described it like this. Whatever, when you're talking about a potential pro, I mean, he's really slender. I mean, if you push too hard on him, you know, he'll fly around a little bit. So he's got to put some weight on and get strong. But whatever it is, he's got it. I mean, he can score. He can create his own shot. He's fast. He looks like a professional player already, even as a freshman. And he's a reclassification. So he left high school early and reclassified, and that's how we were able to get him at such a young age. So he just literally turned 18. So he's really young. Jakaciūnas is someone who's played a lot of international play and has done really well in it. And he's just, he's always got his head up. You know, he's a terrific point guard. I think he's got close to 30 assists already in 6 games, 6, 7. I think he's over 30 assists. So, he's a real distributor. He had a few too many turnovers early. He had a few here and there, but he's tightening that up quite a bit. And again, it's one of those things that it's you've got a lot of weapons to choose from that you can use if you're Brad Underwood. And I think they're still trying to learn, as I said, kind of all the strengths and weaknesses of these guys at this point.
Brian, because you call Illinois football, too, I want to ask you a couple of questions real quick about them. Obviously, we know a lot of the people there in that building. Start with Brett Bielema. Barry Lunny Jr. was a quarterback here and was at Arkansas for a long time in various roles. They seem like they've got things going this year pretty good.
Well, they do, and he's been his fourth year now, talking about Coach Bielema, and he's very, very much steadied the ship. I think one of the things he wanted to do in Illinois has been known for is having like a really, really good year and then 3 or 4 bad years and then go back up and then come back down. And there's never been any kind of consistency to the program. And I think the one thing he's done, the team kind of starts to reflect him now. You know, he's smart. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes as far as the team, the penalties. And they had quite a few last week at Rutgers, which was unusual and just about cost him the game. But they're steady. They're not flashy. They don't blow you away like an Oregon does. I mean, Oregon's really flashy and fast and tough to defend, but they're just steady. They've got a good quarterback, really good quarterback in Luke Altmyer. He's got 20 touchdowns and only 3 interceptions. They've got a running game that hasn't been dominant, but good enough. And Pat Bryant won the game at Rutgers the other day, and he's going to be an NFL receiver, and he's up to close. Well, he's over 900 yards receiving, and Zachary Franklin, who was with Barry Lunny, you mentioned him at when Barry was the offensive coordinator at UTSA. They've added him this year, the current leader in the NCAA in receptions and touchdowns and so forth. And so they've got a pretty good, pretty solid offense. Their defense is not flashy, but pretty steady. And so they're in games all the time. And so what the fortunate thing this year is they've won a lot of those close games, including the one last week at Rutgers in a miracle finish. So they've got one game left to play Northwestern on Saturday up at Wrigley Field in Chicago. And Northwestern's down this year, but and I know you've been and seen a lot, I'm sure, a lot of rivalry games. It really doesn't matter what the records are. I know that's a cliche as old as time, but Illinois leads the series 55-53 with five ties over the years, all the way back to the 1800s. So it's a really close series. And a lot of years with Northwestern, it's like, well, Illinois should win, but, and sometimes they don't. And so Illinois should be a big favorite this weekend. But, you know, they're in good shape. They got a shot at 9 wins with a bowl game. They could win 10, which for Illinois, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. That Wrigley Field game, that's always kind of a unique setup, right? I mean, they because it's hard to get a football field into that baseball stadium.
Well, they didn't play there. We played there at Wrigley Field against Northwestern 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first football game there in 40 years. The Bears used to play there up until 1970 before they went to Soldier Field. And so there wasn't any football at all there until 2010. Then Illinois played a game there. The famous thing about that game was the Wrigley Field has since been renovated a bit, but there was no room on one end of the field, or if there was, it was dangerously close, the right field wall to the back of the end zone. So we had to play one way. We had to play one direction.
I remember that.
Which was unusual. And we had a running back named Mikel LaShore who ran for 330 yards all one way, which was fun. But the Northwestern's been doing that a little more. They're having to now because they're building a new stadium.
Right.
And so they played some of their games on out by the lake at their practice facility. And then they've had, a game with Ohio State this year at Wrigley. And then we're there coming up in a couple of days. So it's a great venue. Supposed to be really cold and windy. But, hey, that's Chicago at the end of November.
Yep, that's right. Busy time of year for you guys doing play-by-play, all the football and basketball going on. Brian, we appreciate your time. And good luck going up to Kansas City tomorrow.
Hey, we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And we thank you for being with us today. Again, have a happy Thanksgiving. Appreciate everything you do to support our work here at WholeHogSports.com. We'll have plenty of football and basketball coverage even on the Thanksgiving holiday on our website. Hope we'll see you there. Hope you have a great time with your family, with your friends. And we'll be back with another podcast on Friday to preview the Arkansas football-Missouri game and talk about the Arkansas-Illinois basketball game. Until then, have a great day, everyone.